podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to Footballers Season 2, Episode 48. This week, Shapeshifters Team 1 was revealed. There's some really juiced cards in that team, and we'll talk about that, break that down, some new SBCs, we'll talk about the content, and we're also going to be going over the results of the team of the season vote, as put out by you guys. And before we start the show, I want to give a huge thanks to all of the Footballers Premier sponsors, supporters. We never thought the podcast would go to where it's gone, and we really appreciate everybody's support. And also our friends over at FIFA U Team. Their website's going to be coming online for FIFA 23. That's going to be your one-stop shop for all things foot, so make sure you check those guys out. This will be our last standard show for Footballers Season 2. We do have a couple of extra episodes that are probably going to be non-foot related. Strictly entertainment coming out in the coming weeks. So stay tuned for that. But this is going to be our wrap up for Season 2 of Footballers. Let's get it going. Welcome back to Footballers. This week, I've got the full panel alongside with Pugzilla. Pugs is back. He's going to go over our team of the season results from the vote we put out. Pugs, how are you doing, man?
Very good. Just in midsummer cycle, enjoying myself in the outdoors and grinding FIFA away like the SOB that I am.
Yeah. Anybody who's listening to the podcast still at this time of the year and still playing, you're a true degenerate. We appreciate you. Mets, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. I managed to get my weekend league campaign done super early this weekend. It was done by midday on Saturday, so I could actually go out and enjoy real life, which was nice. And I think I mentioned last week that playing these team of the season weekend leagues late, so like Monday, Tuesday, I found that the competition was a lot harder. Seemed to be getting much harder fixtures. I'm not going to say it was easy by any stretch because it wasn't, but it did feel just a little bit softer, a little bit more friendly, like how it used to be. So that was quite nice to get that done and spend some time with the family now that it's summer. That was cool.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of the same. We went to a baseball game this weekend for Father's Day, and it was a good time, even though we got our ass kicked. But Paul, speaking of kicking ass, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. Had a nice weekend, plenty of sun. Played a bit of FIFA. It's been a nice weekend. Nice and relaxing.
You giving out some right fuckings?
Always giving out a fucking or two here and there.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll jump right into the gameplay side real quick. Have you guys noticed anything from the recent announcement they made about tuning servers, scaling some back, bringing some new sites online, trying different areas? I'm not going to go through the whole pitch notes. If you want to read that, you can do that by going and click the link in the show notes. We'll put it in there. But basically what they're doing is putting a bunch of new locations online from what I read, and they're going to be testing different sites, scaling back others, and seeing how people react and collect some data to see how to do it moving forward. Mets, have you noticed anything? And Paul, we'll start on that side of the world. Have y'all noticed any major changes in the gameplay? Positive or negative?
Not for me personally. I always find that playing rivals and weekend leagues pretty stiff this time of year. Certainly has been the case the last few weeks. But you jump into friendlies, super smooth, nice, fast, nippy gameplay. Players who are supposed to feel fast do feel fast, whereas everyone else is walking in mud in the competitive modes. Don't really understand why that is. But with me not being mainland UK, I'm just going to get serviced by whatever the sort of northwest side of the UK is basically being serviced by. So I can't see this making a massive amount of difference for me personally.
How about you, Paul?
The first like week after the announcement, it did feel terrible. That weekend were horrible and that week were horrible. But we have horrible weeks because since, you know, this last few days, it's been absolutely fine. So it's hard to tell because it's so inconsistent anyway. Is it just, you know, are you just going through a bad spell where your connection's shit, or is it something that they've done on their end? Who knows?
Yeah, there's too many variables to really know for sure if it's them or if it's you or if it's just random. That seems to be the case all the time. But yeah, I was just curious. Pugs, have you noticed any difference in your gameplay, specifically the champs gameplay?
Yeah, I think my ping a couple times, I did get under 35, which is really good for me, and kind of raised my eyebrows a few times. The thing is, though, is that doesn't seem to translate to much that I've found. Still had a game-breaking lag issue in one of my games that legitimately cost me a game. At least in my mind, I was pushing for a late equalizer, and then the red bar thing popped up at the top center of the screen, where like some type of lag issue was happening, a desync or something, and the gameplay completely fell apart. Lost the opportunity for my attack late in the game, and then boom, there's my loss, one goal loss, you know? So,
yeah,
you know, it's kind of same old, I think, for me. We'll see. Hopefully they do resolve it, though, because I think that's a major issue in the whole FIFA ecosystem, for sure.
Yeah, well, for those who don't know, the signs that pop up on the screen for your connection, the little bars that look like cell phone towers, those are ping spikes, and the little blocks are packet loss. So if you're ever curious what that means, that's kind of what it translates to. It. So you're going to have some choppy or delayed, even sometimes speed up lag in that situation. So that's what that translates to. I actually played quite a bit of FIFA this week. When I saw Felipe come out, I really used his headliner's card a whole lot, and I had to do this SBC. And I really feel like he was extremely cheap. Did anybody else in here do that SBC?
I've just done it now, like in the last hour on my...
What do you think of him?
Spare account. I've only played a couple of games, so it's hard to tell, but on paper, he looks phenomenal.
He's so good.
I haven't tried him yet, but cheap SBCs, I think, is going to be the norm for the next couple months. Insigne, I mean, very reasonably priced. The Chiellini they dropped.
Super cheap.
They're giving them away. They're giving them away. 99s all over the defense, all over the physical.
Yeah.
Giving them away.
Just imagine. I mean, I know we paid a little bit of Premier League tax and the French tax, but that Chiellini card matches up very well to that Varane card. And we paid $1 million for Varane. And this one was, what, under 200K, if I remember?
Yeah. Like 130 or something.
83, 84 rated squad. It was crazy.
Yeah. So if you need a strong, solid center back, go ahead and do yourself a favor and pick this guy up. The issue is for me personally is I don't have a lot of Serie A on my team. I did get an untradeable Theo the other day, which was very good from those team of the season upgrade packs. He's untradeable. So might be able to squeeze him in, but very good center back for the money. Has anybody tried Chiellini so far?
Yes.
Talk to me.
Straight into my team. And I can tell you all sorts of stuff about, oh, you know, he's a brick wall and he's super solid and really fast and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's all really important, but it's totally what you expect. What I didn't expect was turning circles to be so fast. So a lot of the gameplay now, let's say the attacking team, trying to walk the ball into the box, constantly making little 360-degree turns to try and wrong-foot you to get a shot off. And again, some of the older defenders in the game, that works really strongly, but Chiellini is very difficult to wrong foot and he recovers really quickly if you're able to get past him. And I think that is now the sort of next level of gameplay where we're at now. They put Varane in to stop the speed rats. Chiellini now in to stop the little in-the-box 360 spinners from getting shots off on the weak foot, that kind of thing. So we then need a forward upgrade in the next promo, which is where everyone's going to go five-star weak foot, because even with the shapes shifts and stuff, hardly any of them have had weak foot upgrades, at least not to five stars anyway. And that's where the real competition comes into place. Then all of these cars that are getting 90 plus stats and five-star weak foot, that's when you know you're in the sort of like end game stage of Ultimate Team. But Chiellini's going to bridge that gap until we get to that point defensively. So almost everyone's going to be running that card, and it's going to be a little bit harder to score from here on in.
Strong link too to one of my sneaky players. We're going to get into this later with the team of the season vote, but Cuadrado. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'm really liking that too.
Packs, and he has, there's a meme going around talking about he got that dog in him. Cuadrado has certainly got that dog in him. Just always coming up with the clutch plays, you know. Deflected ball, he'll get to it before it gets out of bounds, or he'll play it off the opponent for a throw. Just, oh, can't wait to get it. I might have to do Chiellini just so I can get Cuadrado to start.
But Cuadrado's a really good card. I think he would be more popular if he wasn't Colombian. I mean, you know, if he was French or English or something like that, I feel like he'd be way more popular, way more expensive. But even throughout the years, I loved Cuadrado. He's very good. Play him on the wing, 3-5-2. That's where he really shines for me.
He had a Fiorentina team of the season, I think, in like 15.
Oof.
That was really, really good. I used to use him with Falcao up top when Falcao had that team of the year, was it, from Monaco? Oh, the day.
Fucking hated that card, dude.
Slap a Freddie Groen in there for the linkage.
Yeah.
All those Colombian Vasi Barbo. etc.
Oh, don't even remind me. What was that? Was that FIFA 14 or 15?
It's been many.
It was 14. Oh, that was sweat, man. Let's talk about shapeshifters. I got a lot to say about this, and I don't want to rant, but I feel like I'm going to speak for most of our Discord community after talking to a bunch of them when I say that this promo completely buried Team of the Season. And I think, Mets, you mentioned it last week. Paul, you did as well. You kind of alluded to the fact that this next promo was going to shit on the entire Team of the Season promo, and it appears to have done just that. We got some really fire cards to talk about. First, Pugs, give me your thoughts on Shapeshifters promo with this team and how it relates to Team of the Season for you.
It just it shows the trend that the high-end cards are ridiculously overpriced and rare, and then the low-end cards that are really amazing and overstated are way too cheap. I watched its way back last night pack Mukele, or I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, Mukele, who I bought for my team, 95 sprint speed, high 90s defense, high 90s physical, French Bundesliga, you know, good size, good traits, you know, 85 dribble, 60K. What are we talking about? And then you got these high-end cards, Sinaldo, 4 million. 4 million. He's got ones and twos and a position change over his Team of the Season. I don't know how we've gotten to this point where you only can pack one or two promo cards out of the group and like make big profits. Everything else is discard almost instantly. And I guess it's good to some extent because I put Mukele in my team and I can't wait to use him this week. But at the same time, I don't know, it's kind of a weird vibe. I don't know if we've ever been in this situation as a community where 80% of every promo is overpowered cards that go straight to discard. I don't know if we've ever been here before.
Yeah, it's sort of like the, I'm not going to go political, but the whole income inequality debate, right? You have just two different class of players. You have your average hardcore and you have your rich hardcore. And the rich hardcore are going to have your Sinaldos, your Messis, like 7.6 million for Messi right now. Like, that's insane to me. But the gap in quality and price of cards is just so high. It's almost like we need to set a standard and just have a baseline price that everybody pays the same price for this card, no matter what, and just have complete control over the market. I know Paul's not a fan of that, but Paul, tell me what you think about Shapeshifters.
I like it. You know, there are some cards that are better than the Team of the Season cards, but I just think it adds a bit of something different, doesn't it? You've got position changes. You've got some cards like Atal that people absolutely love in FIFA. But
love at all.
It does baffle me the price of some of these cards. That Messi card and the Song card, they are position changes, but they're not much better than the Team of the Season versions. But that Mukiel that Pugs were just talking about, 68K, that card,
yeah,
6 weeks ago, would have been a mil.
Easy.
Do you know what I mean? That's like... It's baffling. It's going to be an absolutely insane card. I thought it were going to be hundreds of thousands. I really did. But the supply that we get from these 86 doubles and all these new lightning rounds that we've got this year just puts everything apart from the really rare cards just in the mud straight away. It's just so cheap, which, you know, I'm not complaining, but it does put these other cards then so far out of reach because people are constantly losing coins. I bought a load of the sort of meta Team of the Season cards on Thursday, Friday, mm-hmm. thinking, you know, they're going out of packs. These will probably rise and I've probably lost 30%, maybe more on, and I put all my coins into them. But, you know, it does just seem to be every promo we get just kills the last one. Everyone's constantly onto the new cards, but even these new cards are cheap. So it's, people are just losing coins all the time, I think. So it just loses the value of everything, people's clubs, cards in the game, everything.
Mets, give me something positive.
I don't have anything majorly positive nor negative to say about Shapeshifters. It was kind of a predictable thing. We kind of knew what it was going to be like. And I think people get a little bit disappointed when the new promo often mimics quite a lot of the previous promo. So we've had a few cards that were in Team of the Season also in this one, and then they've put out end of an era cards like Chiellini, who was in Foot Captains not long before Team of the Season, all sort of popping up quite close together. I don't think that's particularly good planning for me, on that front. I thought when they did Captains Chiellini and Mark Noble, that was essentially their end of the era cards because the timing was perfect. We all knew they were both retiring at the time. And then they've gone and done another one on top as well. So whatever. But what I noticed, and I'm sure lots of other people have, this isn't terribly insightful for me at all, but during every week of Team of the Season, there was basically a bunch of cards, eight of which you could pack dead easy, and then three in each team that were nigh on impossible to get. And that's carried on straight into Shapeshifters. There's the three that are worth a shitload of money, and everything else is like super high supply. So it not only tanks the value of what's in this team because the value is dropping constantly, but it's also greatly diminishing the value of Team of the Season cards as well. Not that a lot of them are carrying a lot of weight beyond the week of release anyway. So basically it's just making all your assets in your club essentially worthless, ready for when they drop that big end of the season promo that they know everyone's going to go apeshit for, and people will just have to buy FIFA points to try and get stuff because their club, for the most part, will be worthless.
I think it just... For all my pack people, it's been a while since I've bought packs with FIFA points, but I'd imagine it'd be discouraging, you know, if you put on $100, because the packs that you or the players that you are realistically going to pack are the Mukeles, are the even a tall is, you know, 200-300k, and it's just never going to get you to that Messi, even if you really really want that Messi. It's just not going to get you fast to the Messi. There's no cards in packs right now that's going to bridge that gap from,
yeah,
you know, 300-400k in a 12k FIFA point pack opening to 7 mil, 6 mil, 5 mil to a Messi. So you either would have to spend thousands or just get insanely lucky and pack Messi straight away. And I've still not packed Messi, fun fact, in 7 years of FIFA. Except for the World Cup mode, the World Cup Russia mode. So I don't know if people should actively expect to pack Messi. You know what I mean? So
do not expect it.
It's one of those things that, you know, for the people that really, really want to play with Messi, I don't know what to say, because spending money doesn't seem to really get you many places, because the cards you're going to pack aren't going to bridge that gap ever.
You're still at the mercy of EA's pack luck, even if you wanted to spend $10,000 on the game to play with Messi. There's still a pretty good chance you won't pack him. So I think that's what frustrates most people. You can't get the most enjoyment out of the game, even if you pay for it.
You could pack. You could use one of mine. I've packed him three times.
What a dick.
No. I've packed the Team of the Season one while he was in in La Liga team in League One Team of the Season. Then I got his red this weekend, So duplicate, and I packed his gold earlier on in the year. But it really is one of them, like a tradable card like that. If you pack a tradable one, mine won't tradable, all untradable. If you pack a tradable card like that, it completely changes the game for you. You're playing a completely different game to everybody else, because you can pretty much sell that and go buy nearly every other card in the game. And it just is such a gamble. Like, just it's just luck in it, you know. It really is.
Indeed. It's like we were saying. I think that's one of the biggest things that rubs people the wrong way with this game, is that no matter how much money you pour into it, and I know, Pugs, we talked about it on that little one-on-one we had about a month ago, no matter how much money you put into the game, there's still a chance you can't get what you want. And that's just, it doesn't sit right with me, because to me, when you pay for something, you should be able to get what you want. But it's not the case with this business model that they have. Let's move on, though, to some of the new content we got. And Metz, you mentioned it in our DMs, and I'll let you explain it, because I'm a little bit baffled. Maybe I just haven't looked through all the content enough. I mean, it did just come out about 30, 40 minutes ago. A 60 to 64 SBC. Is it even called an upgrade SBC? Tell me it's not called an upgrade.
I don't know what they're thinking with that one. If there's something coming that I just happened to not have noticed at this point, I don't know, but I saw it and I was just like, what is that all about? I don't get it.
There's got to be something coming down the pipe. I don't know. Paul, Pugs, you guys have any insight onto why they would give us a bronze SBC?
Is it because of the objective that's out? But surely people have got enough bronze.
What's the objective for those of us who haven't had a chance to have a look?
Win one. It's live foot friendlies with bronze and silvers.
What a time of year to be doing that. I mean, come on.
I'm looking at it now for the first time because I'm just not giving it my time. Like, when Silver Stars came out, nobody really, really wanted to play it then. We're now way, way, way down the line. Like, I'm hungry for PAX, but I'm not wasting my time playing that.
They called it an upgrade. 60 to 64 times 5, quote, upgrade. Pugs, can you explain that?
It's called jumping the shark, and it's a long story, but the phrase is called jumping the shark. But basically, for those of the viewers that don't know the shark jump, there's a very popular TV show called Happy Days, and Happy Days lasted a very long time on TV to the point where they ran out of every single plot line to do. So they made their main character jump a shark in a lake or something. And so he took water skis and he jumped a shark. And that was the end of the popularity of that show. So I think this might be one of those moments where EA is figuratively jumping the shark on this year's content, because there's not a single person in my Twitch chat that has come by. There's not a single person on Twitter that said, hey, you know what I want to do? Bronzes, baby.
Fuck yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there's got to be something either coming or something that we've missed. But yeah, if you got some stuff you want to go upgrade, you can upgrade to bronze cards. Yeah. Well, what about any other new content? We did get an 85 plus player pick. Did you guys do that one today?
Not yet, but we'll no doubt look into that one. I've got a whole transfer list full of fodder to start going into these type of SBCs, but not bronze. That's for sure.
Mm. I did my 85 player pick before we started, and I got Gold Suarez, which I guess could have been worse. But at the same time, it's like, again, at this point in the game, 88 Suarez, gold, what's he do for you other than fodder? I feel like 95% of the cards in this game are either useless or fodder. And I feel like people only want to play with that 5%. I don't know if I'm in the...
I had Gold Conte yesterday. I haven't opened up mine today, but Gold Conte, same story as Suarez, you know. At one time in a bygone era, it was a good pull. Now it's just a waiting game where EA give us a good SBC to put them into, or they don't, and I just keep accumulating more cards like Mets.
Yeah.
And we are at that stage now where improvements in teams are very, very hard to come by. So now it's just a squad building, Panini collecting exercise in it. Mm. You know, you can add, you know, an Atal maybe who's got a 5-star weak foot that might add something else or a different position change. But I do really like this part of the game where you can now use all those cards that you've packed during Team of the Season and play on. I hope we're going to get some Weekend League Plus soon to sort of force me into playing with those cards a little bit over the weekend. And that's usually due round about now, but I'm hoping that comes soon.
I've got a question to ask you guys, though, just on the back of what Paul was just saying about, you know, having a big variety of cards and it turning into a bit of a sticker album collection hoarding type situation. But as we've now come out the other side of Team of the Season, we've all probably accumulated a lot of cards, some of which we use regularly and probably many more that we'll never ever use. But one thing that I did find is that I was on a very clear path before Team of the Season of what I wanted my team to be, and it was very Serie A themed and I had a system down. And then as soon as I got into the ebb and flow of packing so many different players in different leagues, it totally disrupted what I was trying to build. And I was basically building a new team every week with that league of that particular week and just fell off massively. Like, my results plummeted because I was just all over the place. I was spoiled for choice. And that it's really affected my enjoyment of the game and my results. You know, both, of course, are a little bit tied together. But it was horrible until I sort of got to the end of last week. And I was just like, you know what? Just stop doing what EA are trying to get you to do and make the team you actually wanted to run with in the first place.
Right.
And just ignore the fact that you've got a few 95s that you can't squeeze into your team. It's just not going to happen. Play with the team that suits you, the one that you wanted to make in the first place. And I don't know if that happened to any of you guys, but it was quite an eye-opener for me because I didn't think I'd be so easily foiled like that, but they got me big time.
Yeah. It's so hard. You pack a new card and you think he's better than the one that's in your team. So you change about, you slot this card in, and you end up using better card rather than the perfect one for that system in that position. Do you know what I mean? I've done it loads over the last few weeks, putting cards in that I've packed or really wanted to use that have not been an improvement because they're not ideal in that position or that formation or whatever. It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was faced with a similar situation just the other day when I got Felipe Anderson. I started looking at options because I can only get him on 7 Kim at the moment, and I wanted to try to get him on 10. The only way I could really do that is to do the Insigne SPC and also get Immobile. So I would be locked into one striker, basically. The most effective striker for that system would be Immobile, and I'm not particularly crazy about Immobile. So I decided not to do it, and I just went back, and I said, you know what, I'll just play him on 7. And he does fine. He does okay. I mean, these type of cards at this stage of the game, you can definitely get away with playing them on 7 as long as your team chemistry is on 100. Even some of them on 5, if your team chemistry is on 100, you don't lose anything. You just don't gain anything for boost. That said, I know a lot of people have been using basic chemistry style lately. I know we talked about that a few months ago that this would happen, but if you're still using traditional chem styles on cards, try to throw a basic on there and just see what it does for you. You'd be surprised how much better it is at this point with such high rated cards. Before we get into the results, I want to talk about one last thing, icon SBCs. And Pugs, we'll start with you. How do you feel about EA's job with icon SBCs for FIFA 22 and the current stage of icon SBCs? And today we got a Butragueño Moments SBC. Do we feel like they're on time with these? Are they late? Or is it all pretty much useless at this point?
You know, I got so many thoughts, and I feel there's a way to do icon SBCs that help every level of player. And it kind of goes back to a Madden system. I come from Madden, the American football game. I come from Madden years ago before I started playing FIFA. I've switched in FIFA 15 full time, but they had a system where you would collect collectibles to craft icons. So my whole idea, and this is something that I've had an idea for years, is you put all the icons in the store available, all versions, including at the start of the year, Ronaldo, the big ones, but you monitor their prices by collectibles. So you have like different tier collectibles, legendary collectibles. You have icon, like different levels. And then you put those collectible cards in packs. And so those become tradable assets on the market. So they fluctuate with the market. Sometimes they're cheaper, sometimes they're more expensive. Packing an icon collectible for one of the high-end icons would be a very valuable pull. Or you could keep it for yourself and try and work towards something. But the idea that certain icons are not in the game at the start of the year kind of bothers me, because like we were talking about earlier with people spending a lot of money and not being able to play with their cards. You know, if I want a Prime Moments R9 and I spend $10,000 at the start, I shouldn't have to wait until January to play with Prime Moments R9. And it could potentially throw off the power balance of the game. I understand that. But at the same time, the whole point is the ultimate team mode. I feel like they're missing something with the icon SBCs, with these staggered releases. They're missing something. And I feel like having consumable pieces regulate the cost of the SBCs could be something that they could do, but they don't listen to me. I don't have any pull with EA, so it's just me shouting at the wind like an old man again, but
that's what we do.
That's just an idea I had. As far as like the Butcher SBC now, you know, there might be some Butcher fanatics out there. I think in general, what I think EA are trying to push people to is packs, icon packs. They did a couple good player SBCs, the Vieira, Maldini. I know a lot of people like Lahm, but I think in general, EA would prefer most people to go untradeable and to go into icon packs and to get the luck of the draw.
Yeah, just play the odds that are always against you. Paul, what do you think about the situation?
I think we're way too late. Like, I think at this stage, there's probably half a dozen icons that people want, or you know, that are as good as these Team of the Season cards and shapeshifters that we're getting, and we've not had any of those in an SBC yet, so we're way off. I think there's too many versions of icons for a start. I think, you know, that Madden sort of example, I think that'd be great, but let's get it down from, you know, three versions. But they need to do something. I think it would disrupt the power curve, but if everybody's got the opportunity to get those cards, everybody's on a level playing field. Like you say, somebody could spend 10 grand and not be able to get R9, especially the last few years. I've done a little bit better this year at getting the price of these icons down, you know, R9 won't extinct forever this year. And some of the other ones have been so much cheaper. I think you look at Eusebio now and he's 2.5 mil, I think. But they definitely need to look at this and revamp it. But I think we are going towards more untradeable packs, so maybe that's something that they'll change in that process.
Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here for a second. I know you guys are both right, in my opinion, as far as hardcore players that play the game every day for most of the cycle, they're way too late. But I think for your average Joe, your average FIFA player, your Division 6, Division 5, even Division 7 and 8, the guys who play a lot, they're just not very good. They just like to get on and play. They're not super meta. Like, they like this because they're still playing the game. They get these cheap icon SBCs and they get to put their hands on them and use them and touch them where they ordinarily wouldn't have in previous titles. So, and I think there's a lot more of those people than there are people like us. That's just kind of where I think EA are looking at this, because if you give us those cards too soon, what are we going to, bitch, because we're going to say, well, we want a better version, or we want more. We want this now because we're bored with this. And it's never enough, I guess, is what I'm saying. I mean, the fact that they're constantly moving that bar and we're always chasing it, if they give it to you too soon, you'll lose interest. But if they give it to you slowly over time, I feel like people probably engage with the game more, and that's probably what they're thinking. That's just my synopsis. I don't know where you're at with that.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And I think one thing that you can kind of observe for having played this game for a number of years is that there's a certain player type who does every SBC. They just have the FOMO, the fear of missing out. They have to do every SBC, and they accumulate players in their club purely via SBC.
I know a guy.
So if there's an instance where you have a low divisional rivals player, only does SBCs, so they're never going to pack an icon, etc., etc. So what EA are probably doing to a certain degree of the player base is, we're going to give you a taste of what it would have been like to have had this icon way earlier in the game. You can feel how great it is, even if it's not like one of the absolute elite ones. It'll still feel way better than most of the cards they've been using all year. And then you think, shit, if only I could have had that at the beginning of the game. And then they pursue said icon cards earlier on in next year's game. So they're opening more packs, et cetera, et cetera. They're giving them a taste of what it's like to sort of beat the power curve at the level of the game that they're playing in. It's all by design. I'm sure they know exactly what they're doing. They've got data we don't have access to, and that's why they're doing it. But you see it all the time. And just to confound the point that we were making about having, say, prime icon moments cards or something like that early on in the game, it's not that different than someone getting Golden Mbappe week one. That card's still usable now. If you've got Golden Mbappe, you're trashing everybody. So what's the harm in adding a Ronaldo in there or something, which 1 in 100,000 players will probably get or something like that? You know, it's barely going to be noticeable.
Yeah.
I just had one more thing too, and I think Mets touched on it, and I just wanted to comment on it. But specifically the SBC that dropped today, Butra, Stoichkov, a couple other of the icons as well, very unique skill sets. And he said that, you know, it might whet the appetite and you might become a Butra fan for next year. It's very true with Butra. Butra and Stoichkov in particular, but some of these icons have very unique stats and very unique play styles. And if you've not played with a Butra, if you've not played with a Stoichkov or some of the other very unique icons, you could honestly fall in love and that could be your dude and he could carry you. Like some people I play occasionally with Butra, I mean, hat tricks, goals flying in left, right, and center, because he's got a very unique style, you know, and it could be somebody that people overlook. And maybe this is an opportunity for them to get a cheap look at that card and see what it has to offer, you know?
Yeah. You slap a dead eye on Buttra, that moment's Buttra, and he's banging goals from everywhere. I mean, I don't know what it is about him. His long shots just seem to be way better than anybody else in the game. I always concede just ridiculously long shots with Buttra Genio, and more than one in a game too. It's just, he's got something. I don't know about these icons, man. I always said it since the beginning. They have a special sauce. I don't know. They have some kind of hidden gem, some kind of super secret sauce that they just don't tell you about. But I feel like they just play different, some of these cards, especially like Pullet and those types. But let's move on to the results of the vote that you guys put in. Mets, thank you for building this. It got a lot of responses and got a lot of interesting takes on the write-in section. We'll go into those. But first of all, let's go over the winner of the goalkeeper segment. The first guy who came in first was Courtois. He got 36% of the vote. Allison getting 26% of the vote. And Maignan getting 16% of the vote. I feel like that's pretty fair. I feel like Courtois, the season he's had, especially that final against Liverpool, that he had a hell of a game. What do you guys think about the goalkeepers? Did the community get it right, Paul?
Yeah, I think so. I think Courtois best keeper in game. Well, definitely the best that I've used, with a close second being Alisson. Very good, does it all.
Yeah, I think they got the right one. I think various versions of Courtois have been really good throughout this season, so it's not a big shock, especially after that Champions League final, that people sort of lean towards that one, and you're going to want to link him to Militao to get those nice green links if you're lucky enough to pack or buy one of those off the market. I think the big shock of this particular vote is that the bottom rated out of the list of six that we put up was Neuer, who's just generally always a goalkeeping god in an ultimate team. But I guess there's been fewer remarkable or sexy Bundesliga centre-backs that people wanted to get their hands on this year. So his popularity's suffered as a result. But yeah, I think the top vote was spot on.
Yeah, Neuer got one vote. Pugs, was that you? Did you vote for Neuer?
No, I voted for the winner. Unfortunately, as a Liverpool fan, I had to put my pride away and vote for Courtois. Allison's my favorite player in real life in the moment. I know it's kind of weird to pick a goalkeeper, but I love Ali. And I just couldn't look past Courtois. He's so annoying to play against. Like, I can't even tell you how annoying he is to play against. So I had to pick him. Mm. And, you know, it looks like the rest of the community agreed. So,
yeah, I agree. It looks like for left back, it wasn't even close. Cancelo getting 56% of the vote. And Teo Hernandez come in second with just 20%. I thought this would be a little bit closer, considering a lot of people like that Teo Hernandez card, and he's really good. I mean, I've used him. He's a great card. And Cancelo as well. They're both, I feel like they're just different type of players. I feel like Cancelo is more of a hybrid fullback, and he can play up in the midfield or on the wing. And Teo's kind of just a solid defender. He's not going to do a whole lot for you going forward. That's just me thinking, or me from my experience. I feel like he's a much better defender than Cancelo. So I thought he would have got more love there at the left back spot, but Pug, we'll go back around the other way. How do you feel about this one?
I absolutely love my team this season, Cancelo. He's unbelievable. He plays left mid for me in a 3-5-2. 10 out of 10 player with bonus points. I mean, amazing.
Yeah, Cancelo's been absolutely brilliant for me. He's so good going forward. I play him in midfield sometimes. Absolutely brilliant. Can shoot as well. His shooting's so good, so underrated. And I think the reason Theo probably came second was just so much more expensive, and those Serie A cards were so fucking hard to pack. I think a lot less people have used him, so a little bit easier to link as well in a Cancelo.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I think Cancelo gets it because of linkability to various Premier League Manchester City team of the season cards like De Bruyne and Diaz, which Diaz in particular was super common. So you needed that green link at fullback to pair him up with. I think he's 4-star skills, 5-star weak foot, so you can play him pretty much anywhere. So good through the middle, so fast and powerful. And he's like, I think he's over 6 foot for a fullback. He's absolutely massive. So I'm not sure he's the best defensive fullback on that list. I would probably give that to Fonzie at Bayern. But overall, yeah, it's just such an adaptable card for people who want to play your 3-5-2s and stuff like that. It's a super necessary card to have. So yeah, no big shocks there whatsoever, and full agreement with our listeners.
Yeah, and the right back situation wasn't much different. Trent getting most of the vote there, getting 37% of the vote, with second place being Pugs' boy, Cuadrado, with 23%. And actually, Tavernier got 20% of the vote for third place. I was surprised to see him get that many votes. Obviously, I mean, we can run through this one real quick. I feel like right back had significantly less options this year than usual. I mean, I have the Trent card untradeable, but I feel like a lot of people have that card because so many people got these cards in the Premier League team of the season when the pack weight seemed to be a little bit higher. I feel like Trent's good, but I feel like sometimes he just kind of lets you down. He's a little bit stiff. He's not as strong on the ball. Metz, what do you think?
I think last time we had Pugs on with us, we were talking about pain in the ass tots cards, and Trent was the one that was coming up all the time. Perhaps not as good at going forward as Cancelo. In the game, that is, not in real life, of course. But his sheer size just made him an absolute nightmare to get around in those early weeks of team of the season. So it was fairly common, good to play with and difficult to play against. So not a big shock that one won, though my personal choice was Cuadrado. And I do really like Tavernier, but not at right back. I sometimes sub him in and play him at CM, and he's a nightmare in the midfield, but he wouldn't be my first choice right back by a million miles. Cuadrado's got everything. He could play just about every position going. He's such a unique card because in real life, started his career as a winger and was sort of moulded out of necessity by Juventus to play at right back in the last 2 or 3 years. So he's basically a really good winger with 5-star skills that can play at right back, and those defensive stats have been brought up to where they need to be. So he's now a super effective defender and attacker. So that would be my choice. So I'm not going to say anyone got it wrong because, you know, Trent's a solid card, but Cuadrado for me was definitely my choice.
I just feel like Cuadrado, when you got cards getting released, like Insigne, and Metz was talking about it earlier in the pod, but these left, right, back, forth turners, you know, how Chiellini does well. It's the same with Cuadrado being a little bit better than Trent when it comes to these people turning backwards and backwards and forwards and backwards and backwards. And Cuadrado just has that unbelievable agility. Like he said, he's a winger playing right back, so he can stay in front. And then he's got the standing tackle now with this team of the season card to just nick the ball, and then he's out the other way. It's a fantastic card. Love him.
Yeah, Trent's brilliant. I've been using him for the last few weeks, but I've just swapped him out for Cuadrado because I did that Chiellini SBC. But yeah, I think people, from what I've used, Trent's just one of those where you go down that side, you're like, oh shit, Trent's there. You go down the other side, Cancelo's there. It's so difficult to attack now. But yes, Trent was super popular, so the vote doesn't surprise me. But Trent's the one that I put in there as well at right back. Really good, solid card.
Yep, agree. All right, center backs. We got, well, first place was clearing ahead. It was Eder Militao. He got 56% of the vote. And we had a two-way tie for second between Virgil van Dijk and Koulibaly, both getting 30%. And Marquinhos came just behind him at 26%. So let's debate this. We'll break the tie here, and we'll start with you, Pugs. Between Virgil van Dijk and Koulibaly, who gets second place for you?
He was a legend for me this year. I got to go with Koulidaddy. If you followed my streams at the start of the year, he had that early player of the month, and he was fantastic. I haven't had a chance to use his team of the season. I was a Militao voter in this one. I confess, Militao voter. If I was to see a loading screen of Koulibaly or Virgil, I'd be more fearful definitely going against the Koulibaly.
Interesting. Paul?
I picked Virgil because I think Eder Militao, Koulibaly for some reason just didn't feel it for me. I were the same. I used his player of the month so much at the beginning of the game, and he were absolutely brilliant. So I was so happy when I packed that card. but he just didn't seem to have it. I did play him when I had bad connection one weekend, so maybe that were it. So it were Virgil for me, but I will say this about Virgil. I feel like you need somebody who is quite fast and agile beside him. So, you know, I think Eddie Militao and Virgil are a really good combo. But I didn't choose either of those in my vote. I chose Marquinhos and Eddie Militao.
Mm. Mets, where are you at with this one?
Yeah, I was same as Paul, Marquinhos and Eddie Militao, absolutely fantastic. When I've used them, Militao in particular just seems a little bit more special than the rest. I hate playing against a combo that you see a lot in weekend league, which is Virgil and Diaz. It's just like they're just about good enough to be amazing, even if their face stats don't wow you or seduce you or whatever. But their combined physicality with the team of the season stats just make them a true nightmare to play against. But I like the result of this one. It was quite fiercely contested. All really solid picks. So, you know, our community knows what they're talking about. So it's good to see.
You have to break the tie, man.
I'm breaking the tie.
Virgil or Koulibaly?
I would personally go Virgil, purely because I think when I use Koulibaly, he seemed a little bit kamikaze for some reason, and he's got a really annoying running animation that just pisses me off. He looks a little bit strange, like Haaland has a similar one when he's running. He just sort of dips his head down like he's about to run through a brick wall or something. Virgil, perhaps a more solid, more predictable centre-back, and that's a respect, more reliable. Yeah, that's what I'm going to go with. Certainly links to so many of these cards that we're talking about.
Virgil is your second. Koulibaly is your close third. Sorry about that, Pugs. We're going to go to the midfield, and we'll just talk about all three that won. The first one, Jude Bellingham, is number one, 53% of the vote. And Modric coming in second with 46%. And Tonali getting 43%. So for midfielders, we have the top three were Jude Bellingham by quite a lot, Modric, and a close third was Tonali. So these are your three team of the season midfielders as voted by you. I wasn't surprised to see Bellingham up there. I was surprised to see Modric get as much love as he got, because I don't really come up against him a whole lot in weekend league and rivals, but I love the Modric card, the gold card I used for the first like 3 months of the game. I feel like he was massively underrated and super cheap for what he gave you, what he brought to the table. And Tonali, everybody loves Tonali. That card's great. Mets, take us through your thought process.
Yeah, I do wonder if Tonali is so popular purely because he's so fast, because as a midfielder, he's not diminutive in size like a Modric, so quick on the turn, that kind of thing. And he's not a beefcake like a Declan Rice or something like that. So he's somewhere in the middle, but very fast. So if that appeals to you, that's all well and good. I would much prefer a Modric, or if I'm going to go for pure athleticism, shout out to Gravenberch, who should have done better in this one. And as per the defenders, you would have had to absolutely picked Timber for my ex to partner up with him for those green links. Gravenberch for me is absolutely fantastic. Difficult to link if you don't want to go Eredivisie, though, unfortunately. But it's not a shock that Bellingham was so popular, being English and 90 plus on most things. And I always really enjoy using all Modric cards and Ultimate Team. They generally come out at the right time to be useful. And I haven't had as much time to play with that one as I would like. I've always tried it in draft, but I'd certainly like to own that card to pair it with my Militao. That would be really cool. But yeah, good picks all around, but I do wonder if Tonali was purely on pace, but we'll have to get some feedback from the guys on that one.
Paul?
My picks were Bellingham, Paqueta and Nkunku. Bellingham is just an absolute beast. But one that Matt said there, which I've not used yet, but I've played against so many times, and every single time I've played against that guy, he has been a fucking nightmare. And not just defensively either, just scores so many goals as well when I play him, is Gravenberch. Absolute banger. I need to use him at some point. But Paqueta has been so good for me, can do it all, can defend, scores goals, just always involved in everything, as is Nkunku. And shout out to my guy Talisca. Just throw him in there, just cause.
All right, Bugs, wrap us up in the midfield.
Yeah, I think instead of saying who I loved, well, I suppose I'll just briefly touch on that and then I'll go forward. But like Bellingham, Modric got a huge defensive boost. Very annoying to play against. He's so good defensively. And then I also said Tonali because I feel like he was very common in red picks, so people got a lot of chances to use him. I'm not surprised to see him that high on the list. But I think when you look at the list, you got Kimmich, Wirtz, Pedri, some of the guys we're not talking about, Bruno, De Bruyne, Guendouzi, who I have starting in my team, Fofana. I think the one thing that in this team of the season cycle that I really was conscious of was it's not pay to win per se, because some of these cards are very cheap, but every card is so statted out that you could honestly make a case for almost all these guys. Like Guendouzi's in my starting lineup with Fred as a double pivot. Fred didn't even make this list. Fred's the straw that stirs the drink in my midfield. He's so important. and he's, you know, in the back 30 of the best midfielders in the game, according to the community, which he probably is, but they've got so many statted out cards this year, especially in the midfield, where I remember, and I know Mets and everybody else will remember too, but like, when that first car dropped a Guarín in for him and it was 80 in all stats and everybody's like, oh my gosh, he's in the Hullet gang. Now we got 90s all around. Don't even raise an eyebrow for midfielders anymore. And some of these guys are, I mean, it's fun. It's fun. It is what it is, but it's just such an amazing thing to look at a list like this and really deep that one of my favorite midfielders had two votes. And, you know, and I probably justly too, because I know how good that Bellingham is. I know how good that Gravenberch is. I know, you know, because I play them all the time. So,
yeah, I was shocked to see Kevin De Bruyne where he was at. I mean, he's been one of my all time faves every year in foot. I mean, I guess he would have got fourth place here, but just really surprised to not see some of these names in this list. And, Tonali really surprised me the most, to be honest. I figured De Bruyne would have got in there before Tonali, but hey, we got some Serie A homers. Wingers weren't such a surprise, maybe a little bit, but left wing was easily Vinicius Jr., which is kind of odd in years past because you kind of would assume Neymar to take that role, but Neymar's kind of been a non-factor this year, both in real life and in FIFA. And for right wing, this is where I was really surprised. Salah was edging Messi. So Salah edged Messi by 3 votes. Now, I know Messi didn't have a great year, but he's still Lionel Messi, right? That's everybody's favorite. He's always locked down that right wing position in team of the season. Interesting to see Salah get up there. Pugs, I want to get your thoughts on this one, but talk to me about the wingers. How do you think this one came out?
Well, you mentioned Neymar, and I think familiarity is just an issue there. That card is insanely rare. I play hundreds of games a week. And a red Neymar or just even just a blue Neymar, if somebody purchasing him off the market, I can't, maybe once a week do I see that Neymar. I bet you he'd be higher if the drop rates were higher, you know. And Vinicius is still pretty rare, and he got quite a bit of votes. But that Neymar being so low has got to be a scarcity issue, because that card has got to be fantastic. So that's all I would really say about that. I think a lot of the votes are just, I think when I see the trend in the voting in the community, I see familiarity playing a factor, you know, how common cards are. But Vinicius, definitely a worthy winner. Nightmare to play against. Salah and Messi, 1-2. I don't have a problem with that, I suppose. I think Salah is pretty hard to deal with, especially I feel like when you move him central. When you put him at striker, he's less predictable and he gets his shot off better and his shooting is unbelievable. So, yeah, I like the list. I like the list. I think Neymar would be higher, though, if he was more common.
That's a good point. Paul, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that weak foot upgrade gave Salah much more usability. I used him a fair bit. And people always think you're going to go on the left foot with him every time. So it really does throw people off when you turn onto his right foot and blast him. As Pug said, I played him at striker a bit or even at cam, and he was just so good. His finishing were unbelievable, and just all his movement, like at that time, there weren't many other cards that moved like that. He just always seemed to be in the right spot at the right time. When it comes to Vinny, I'd be really interested to know how many people who voted for Vinny actually played with him, or are people just voting out of just sort of popularity? Because I've played that Vinny card twice, and I play a lot of games of FIFA, and I've played him twice. So I've not used him yet. I need to do at some point, but I'm not really using wingers at the moment. Yeah, Messi's up there. Messi's just Messi. Absolute finesse shot machine. Passing's phenomenal. And Neymar, yeah. Who's got a Neymar? Oh, he'd be up there, I think, yeah.
Matt, you want to round it out?
Yeah, I just thought I'd touch upon some of the ones who didn't make, like the top two that were quite interesting. So if we look at Rafael Leao at left wing, who plays for Milan, I struggled with that card when I packed it. Don't find it's the best card to use off the left wing, but if you stick him at striker, particularly on the side of his strong foot, really, really good card. So he might have done better if he'd come out as a striker in team of the season, I think. And then one of the higher voted ones that weren't quite top two was Hani Mukhtar, an MLS card, got a decent amount of votes. And I have played against that one a lot, and people do some good damage with it because it's got 5-star weak foot. So that was a good one to see, that getting some love from the community. And then right up until a couple of days ago on the right wingers, Salah's been the clear leader on this one since day one, basically. But for quite a while in second place was Diaby from Leverkusen. That is a really hard card to play against because, okay, there's a lot of cards that have got 99 pace, but not all 99 paces are made equal. That one's genuine lightning. Really hard to play against. So people have obviously had some enjoyment from that one or some nightmare experiences playing against it, and that nearly snuck in at second place against, you know, your obvious Messi's, et cetera, et cetera. So it's good to see that those ones got a bit more representation from the community vote. People have obviously tried out quite a few of these or played against a variety of them, so there's votes all over the place. But I think they got it right in the end with Vinicius and Salah probably are the best ones out of what most of us have experienced, I would say.
Mm. And last but not least is the striker. And we did one striker because we considered this a solid team with doing four defenders, three midfielders, two wingers, and a striker. That was fair. And to me, it wasn't even close. Karim Benzema gets the crown for the team of the season striker. Had a hell of a year. Capped it off with winning the Champions League. And coming from behind to do it in several games too. Mind you, Mbappe was in second place. He was just short behind him by a couple of votes. I don't think this is a shocker. Is anybody surprised by this?
No, it's the obvious choice and well-deserved.
Yeah.
A little bit. I think with how much scar damage Mbappe's put us through this year, I was kind of expecting maybe an Mbappe win. But, I mean, you made a good case for Benzema. Benzema's got the 5-star upgrade on his weak foot, really statted out his card. So I can see Benzema.
What's really telling to me is CR7 got 0 votes.
Oof.
I didn't expect that. I mean, he didn't have a great year. I just wasn't impressed by what he did this year. I mean, he had a couple of good games against subpar teams. What else?
Yeah, and you don't really see much CR7, really. Not many people seem to have him. When I play against him, it seems to be the player of the month that people did. But I think Benzema's a fair choice. What I am a little bit outraged at is that Ben Yedder did not get more love. Because in my opinion, I've used Benzema. I thought he was shit, heavy and clunky. Ben Yedder, absolutely unbelievable card. And I think he got 2 votes. But yeah. These cards are getting, they're getting more and more accessible now. Benzema's 1.2 on Xbox, and I think Yedder's about 700k-ish, where Mbappe and CR7 are still way up there. But I think as well with Benzema, he's one of those that people have wanted him to have a really, really good card for such a long time. And now he's got one, so people are mad for it. Probably same with Vinny as well, to be honest. That's why they're getting the love. But don't forget the rat.
I just feel like this is one of those things where some people vote strictly based on the game. Some people vote based on real life in the game. And I think this is one of those situations where Benzema was voted because of what he did in real life. I think everybody here will agree that the most usable, the most talented, or the most destructive striker on this squad is Mbappe, team of the season. I mean, he can just tear you down by himself. But I think Benzema was well-deserved to get it here. We did get a couple of write-ins. Some people wrote in players that were on the ballot. I don't know, maybe they didn't like how we had it listed. Benyetter got a write-in. Benzema got a write-in. Mike Mussina got a write-in.
Who?
Pugs, you might be familiar with him.
Mike Mussina, the pitcher?
I think that's our friend Savage P, who's he's playing MLB The Show pretty heavy right now. He wrote in Mike Mussina.
We got so far along here without mentioning MLB The Show. I'm so shocked. This podcast has gone on for so fucking long without getting an MLB The Show, getting a mention. It's usually like a 50-50 MLB The Show FIFA podcast, but this week we got nearly to the end before mentioning it.
Yeah, maybe everybody will stop listening before I go on my MLB The Show rant. I can't help it. I like the game.
Fair dues.
Fred got a write in. Was that you, Pugs?
That was me. Big up the Fred.
Nice. And but the winner from the write-ins was, I think, easily Raspadori. So GG's Raspadori. He would be the wild card winner.
People listening to what I have to say. It's good to see.
Matt wrote in all 17 times.
Oh, I definitely wrote in one of them. 100%.
We need to get some verification on this. Well, that's going to round it out. We went a little bit longer than usual on this one, but this is going to wrap up. Well, I guess really wrap up Footballers Season 2 until we get some more content that we feel like we're going to talk about. But we're going to be going on a break here over the next few weeks until we start to ramp up for FIFA 23. So anything you guys want to say before we sign off for a short break in the foot cycle, Mets?
I'll just say it's been a good season for me. I haven't managed to like smash any pads or anything, which is always nice. The game's kept me engaged throughout. I know some people would say it's not been one of the better FIFAs, but I think having taken a break for the best part of 2 years, you start to get the yearning, the passion back, the desire to play, even in the midst of a lot of bullshit. So if anyone's ever feeling a bit burnt out from FIFA, do something else for a little while. There's other games out there. Real life's got something to offer, of course, as well. I guarantee when you get it out of your life for a while, you'll appreciate it a lot more for all its faults when you come back. That's all I have to say. But it's been cool conversing with you guys. Cool talking to our community. They've been very nice to me and to everybody else, of course, involved in footballers. And I hope you enjoyed our podcast, and we'll see you again next season, if not before.
Fucking season 3, Paul. Imagine.
I'm just getting warmed up. I'm just getting good at this game, and we're stopping. I feel a bit robbed. But it's been so good this game.
We do have a...
Go on, sorry.
We have a special, though. We still have to do the special.
Yeah, we might have a few. Talk all sorts of shit. But it's been good. It's been fun doing the podcast. The game's been really good, I've found. I think it's, you know, we all complain about the game. There's all sorts of bullshit that happens, which makes you want to smash it to bits. But I think they've done a pretty decent job at keeping it ticking away. And, you know, there's still a quarter of the game left. And like I say, for me, this is a fun bit, using the cards that we've picked up along Team of the Season and whatnot. But it's been a fun one. The podcast has been fun. You know, sometimes you don't want to engage in the game. Sometimes the last thing you want to do is talk about FIFA. But the podcast has been good, keeping us in. And, you know, if not, there's always MLB The Show.
Hey, you said it, not me. Pugs, again, thank you for coming on, man. You want to give us some final thoughts on your thoughts for FIFA 22 and the podcast as a whole?
Yeah, I think a word that's very important to me is gratitude. You guys have been very, very kind to me, and I'm very grateful. You know, I fire up the stream every night, and almost every night now somebody comes in from your community and says how they enjoyed my insight and the banter and stuff. And it means a lot to me that you guys have me on every once in a while. It's awesome, and I appreciate it. And thank you. So as far as FIFA goes, you know, I'm going to be doing my thing all summer on FIFA, on Twitch, and then we're going to do, you know, leading up into the new FIFA. So it's a nonstop grind, you know, the content never stops. So it's just part of the process, but thank you. This is my third appearance and, I've had another wonderful time, and thanks Mets. Thanks Wright. Thanks Hunter. And, you know, thank you to the community for listening, obviously. So
thank you.
We appreciate you coming on, man. It's been good. It's been good to get the insight from somebody who's really gameplay oriented, who really grinds the game, and, really appreciate it. To the listeners, thanks everybody for tuning in every week. And we're going to have maybe one or two more random episodes here before we close out for good until season 3. But we don't know when those are going to be. So just stay tuned and check your feeds every now and then. But appreciate everybody listening, and get back with us. We'll still be around the Discord. We'll always be there. You can always catch us on Twitter at Footballers Pod. You can follow the show. You can follow me on Twitter at The Foot Hunter. You can follow Paul.
Right fucking foot.
Without the fucking, at right foot. Mets.
At Lambo Matt on Twitter, or catch me in Discord.
And at Pugs Not Drugs. Did I say that right?
That is correct. Pugs Not Drugs.
That's right. And where can they follow you on Twitch, more importantly?
Twitch.tv/TheRealPugzilla. Not to be confused with the imposters. That's why I'm the real.
Are there imposters?
Well, the whole story behind my name is it's not real, like, in the sense that I'm not fake. It's real in the sense that somebody got the name Pugzilla before me, so they're the fake Pugzilla, and I'm the real Pugzilla.
Outrageous. Let's go get him.
Yeah. All right. Appreciate you guys. We'll catch you guys next season. See ya.
Laz, you cunts.
Sports Social Podcast Network.